Severus hoped, desperately hoped, that Lupin and Black didn't notice him looking at Harry. He hadn't counted on this when they'd taken that final step the previous weekend after Quidditch at the Burrow. He hadn't thought about going back to Grimald Place, sleeping in separate beds and separate rooms, sharing living space with Lupin and Black. There'd been the matter of the full moon to deal with on Tuesday, and Harry had sat beside Severus, across from his godfather and Remus, a look of horrified disbelief on his face as he learned that werewolves, like souls, were real. He'd stood and gone to his room, and they'd let him go, though Remus followed him 5 minutes later, and Severus returned to his office and wondered exactly what the breaking point for Harry might be. He spent most of his time in his office researching. No matter what he had told Harry, no matter what he wanted to believe, the fact was that he could not discount what Albus had told him. Albus had discovered Tom Riddle's secret, and had dedicated the last years of his life to eradicating the Horcruxes. To do what he had done, he'd had to put himself inside the Dark Lord's mind, delving deep into his psyche. Not only did he have to determine that Riddle had made Horcruxes, but how many, and what they were, and where they were hidden. A task bordering on the impossible, achieved almost in entirety by one man, acting alone. One man who had fallen before the task was complete, and who had not handed off the baton before it was too late. When Harry was in training with Mad-Eye, or studying with Hermione, or practicing with Minerva, Severus read tomes so dark not even the hottest shower afterward could make him feel clean. But he soon knew there was no sense in reading more, for there was no precedent for a human Horcrux. Better to try to kill Voldemort now, destroy his body, if not his soul. It took 13 years for him to return after trying to kill little Harry Potter. Would they not have at least 3 or 4 this time? What was the price of buying time? On Friday, George came as scheduled and duelled Harry in the training room. And while hardly even matched, Harry held his own, dodging jinxes and managing a few of his own, and the duel ended with Harry disarming George with a well-placed Expelliarmus. George's wand flew from his hand, and Harry snatched it out of the air. "I've been practicing that one," said Harry, tossing George's wand back to him. "I figured I should at least know one spell really well." "It's a good one to know," said George. "If you can't land a singing hex or jelly leg jinx, anyway."
"You did well, Harry," said Severus. He'd watched the duel carefully, noting how quickly Harry responded physically, even if his arsenal of spells was very limited. He seemed to be a natural at the physical part of dueling. He was quick, sure-footed, and obviously not afraid. He just needed more time, a lot more time, to learn the proper offensive and defensive spells. Before he left the dueling chamber, he asked Harry to stop by his office after dinner to discuss the duel. He had no intention of discussing anything. Nor did Harry, as it turned out. Until this moment, Severus had never realized that his desk was perfect. The perfect height, the perfect weight, the perfect strength. Harry was draped over it now, jeans around one bare ankle, ass bare, gripping the edge of the desk with white-knuckled hands, while Severus knelt behind him, parting the perfect buttocks, running a cool finger down his crease.
"I've been thinking about doing this all day," he muttered,
his fingers kneading Harry's flesh. He'd already startled Harry with the cleaning charm, and threatened him with the magical bindings if he didn't stop wiggling.
"What are you doing?"
Harry moaned as Severus continued kneading pliant flesh, then, without warning, buried his face in Harry's eyes.
"Rewarding you for a duel well fought," said Severus, breathless, a moment later.
Harry was nearly thrashing now, pressing his ass back against Severus's face, fucking himself on Severus's tongue.
"Christ, that's good. That's good. Good, Severus. I never thought I'd like this. Fuck."
Severus's hand moved around to grip Harry's prick, squeezing and pulling it in time with the thrusts of his tongue, loving the rawness of the act, the way Harry melted under him. The unstrung litany of curses, expletives, pleas, promises falling from Harry's mouth. His own prick was hard and leaking, and he had every intention of filling Harry with it, of sinking into that overwhelming tightness. But now he reveled in waiting, in denying himself the pleasure for just another minute, and another minute more, pulling the pleasure out of Harry, stretching him with his tongue while his hand worked the beautiful prick, twisting as he pulled an extra press to the head.
"Oh, fuck. Severus. I'm going to come. Fuck. Fuck. Fuck."
And then three things happened at once.
Harry came in a glorious explosion of semen, sweat, and swear words, his ass pulsing around Severus's tongue, thrusting back against his face. A loud pounding started at the door, and a ghostly cat Patronus leapt through the wall of the library and alit on the desk beside Harry, hissing, then speaking in Minerva's voice, but frantic. Severus jumped to his feet.
"One moment," he called toward the door. "Minerva's Patronus has just arrived."
He made a frantic gesture to Harry, who rolled off the side of the desk and pulled up his jeans, falling sideways to the floor as he did so.
"Severus, I have just found Neville Longbottom at the gates of Hogwarts. Aberforth has come for him. He needs medical attention at once. I've called in Poppy. We are bringing him to Grimald Place."
Harry had gotten to his feet and pulled on his t-shirt. He was staring at the cat, mouth open. Severus, for his part, looked no less gobsmacked.
"Neville Longbottom," said Harry, whirling to face Severus.
"Isn't he supposed to be dead?" answered Severus.
He cast a scourgeous eye in Harry's general direction, then a quick one on himself.
"Sit on the sofa. Read something."
Harry grabbed the Daily Prophet from the floor where it had fallen when Severus had swept the contents of his desk onto the floor and fell back on the love seat. Severus tossed him his shoes and socks, and he quickly pulled on the socks as Severus moved toward the door. Severus threw open the door, and Sirius tumbled in.
"What are you doing?"
he asked, glancing from Severus to Harry.
"It sounded like you were killing each other."
He turned toward Harry.
"Are you all right?"
"I'm fine," said Harry, attempting a smile.
"Neville Longbottom has just shown up at Hogwarts," said Severus, startling Sirius enough to forget about Harry for a while. "They are bringing him through."
"But the Longbottom boy is dead!"
Sirius followed Severus out of the room, shouting after him.
"He's dead, Severus!"
"And so is Harry," retorted Severus.
Harry quickly pulled on his trainers, his gut clenching. Who was going to rise from the dead next? Was nothing as it seemed? Severus and Sirius were gone by the time he made it to the corridor, but he heard voices from the sitting room where they had eaten dinner that first night. He hurried up the stairs and skidded to a halt at the door. Severus and Poppy were bent over the long sofa. A young man was stretched out there. Tall, sandy-haired, very thin. He was moaning, and his face was bruised, his eye nearly swollen shut. But what caught Harry's eye more even than his first glimpse of Neville Longbottom, the other child of the prophecy, was the man standing beside Minerva near the fireplace. This was Aberforth Dumbledore, Old Al's brother. He hadn't been at the last Order meeting, but Harry would recognize him anywhere. His resemblance to his brother was uncanny. Their eyes settled on each other as Harry stood in the doorway. Minerva glanced at Harry, and he gave her a tentative smile.
"Harry!"
she exclaimed, holding out one hand toward him. He entered the room, moving over to stand beside her, taking her wrinkled hand in his own, and stood there for a very long time as Severus and Poppy worked.
"I can't believe it. I just can't believe it."
It was Sunday afternoon, and Ron and Hermione had come to visit Neville.
"Were you all friends?"
Harry asked. They were sitting in one of the smaller parlours upstairs, chessboard set up on the low table in front of the sofa. Hermione was helping Harry this time, as the species were still not very supportive.
"He was in Gryffindor, so yeah, we were friends," said Ron. "I mean, we were in the same dorm for 5 years.
"Neville was everyone's friend," said Hermione. "He was just so unassuming, as good a person as you'll ever find. He was a whiz with magical plants. He planned to study herbology." "How's he doing?" Harry asked. He'd been asked to stay out of sight, on the premise that Neville was still too weak and had a lot of healing to do before they shocked him with a very much alive Harry Potter. Harry's pawn protested his move, flinging itself down onto the board and beating its head against the wood.
"Not good," said Ron.
"Better," answered Hermione. They glanced at each other, and Ron sighed.
"He's not out of the woods yet," said Hermione. "I just can't believe how thin he is, and how old he looks. He was frozen in time, wasn't he? He was 15 in my mind, and I had a really hard time reconciling this 21-year-old man with the 15-year-old boy we knew."
"Has he talked yet?" asked Harry. He'd hardly seen Severus the last 2 days, and when they did cross paths, Severus was distracted, though he had given Harry an apologetic look once, and squeezed his hand in passing. Hermione was shaking her head sadly.
"Just that he was kept in a cell in Malfoy Manor. He says he befriended a house elf there, and the elf helped him escape."
"And that's how we know he's mad, see?" Ron cut in. "A house elf helped him escape? Impossible. House elves are magically bound to the families they serve.
A Malfoy house elf could no more help a Malfoy prisoner escape than it could ride a Thestral to London.
Well, it's what he said, Hermione insisted. And Neville doesn't lie. You know that, Ron. Think about it.
The Neville I knew didn't lie, said Ron. But this Hermione, he's been locked up for 5 years.
He dropped his voice.
He's been you-know-who's prisoner. Who knows what they've told him, or what they've done to him?
They were all silent for a long moment. Finally, Hermione spoke.
He seemed like the old Neville to me, she said stubbornly. He was so gentle. He seemed so glad to see us.
He smiled is all, said Ron. I'm not even sure he knew who we are.
He shook his head.
I'm glad I wasn't the one who had to tell him about his gran, muttered Ron.
What do you mean, his gran? Asked Harry. Neville was raised by his grandmother, answered Hermione. His parents were victims of the Dark Lord, just like yours, Harry.
Not quite like Harry's, said Ron. Harry's parents were lucky enough to die and move on. Neville's parents were tortured until they lost their minds.
He shuddered.
They've been in St. Mungo's mind ward for nearly 20 years now.
Neville's gran died last year, said Hermione. Minerva and Severus told him yesterday. He's taken it pretty hard. They say he hasn't said much since they told him.
Wow, said Harry, wondering at the parallels in his and Neville Longbottom's lives.
Harry?
Harry looked up at the sound of his name. Minerva McGonagall was standing in the doorway.
May I have a word?
Sure. He stood. I'll be back in a bit. Don't win that game without me. Ron snorted.
Having you in the same room as the chessboard doesn't seem to matter much, he joked. But he gave him a fond smile as Harry hurried after Minerva.
"Tea, don't you think?" she asked as they walked down the stairs.
Before Harry found out he was a wizard and came here to train, he thought he'd drank a lot of tea. He was an Englishman, after all, but tea ran as thick as chocolate in this house, where it seemed to be both the beverage of choice, even given such wonderful alternatives as butterbeer and fire whiskey, and an overall curative. Sometimes Minerva or Severus would magic an entire tea service out of thin air, complete with biscuits or scones, and other times they would order it from Kircher, or take the time to boil a kettle on the ancient wood-fueled stove in the kitchen. When Harry asked Minerva about this, she'd cocked her head to the side to think about it, smiling gently, as she often did when she regarded him. He knew, or he felt, that she was seeing past him, back to another day with another young man who looked an awfully lot like him. To another era, when times were not so dire, when she didn't walk such a narrow, perilous line as she did now.
There is a certain comfort in the act of preparation, Harry. Even we wizards understand that.
And that had been all. They found Creature in the kitchen today, and he set about preparing tea for them. Since both Minerva and Harry fell into the category of wizard, he treated with reluctant compliance, if not quite respect, his under-his-breath mutterings were more about how tired he was, how underappreciated, than direct character attacks on Harry and Minerva. Minerva got right to the point.
"I want to speak with you about Neville Longbottom, Harry."
"Right?" Harry looked over at her. "I sort of expected that." Minerva smiled.
"Oh, that obvious, am I?"
She didn't wait for an answer.
"Mr. Longbottom has a rather long road to recovery before him. He has been imprisoned for 5 years, Harry. Unfortunately, he does not yet trust us, despite being well-treated, despite us bringing in his friends to comfort him and to visit. And we need his trust. We desperately need it."
"He's been with the other camp for 5 years, right?" guessed Harry. "He'll know things, things that might help us defeat the Dark Lord."
"Precisely. You understand how desperate these times are, especially given the most recent developments."
She was referring to the list of Muggle-born witch and wizard babies she had been forced to provide the Ministry, to the fact that the Ministry had severed relationships with the Muggle government. He nodded, studying her face. He trusted Minerva nearly as much as he trusted Severus. She was a no-frills person who had been walking a dangerous tightrope since Severus fled Hogwarts and took Albus's place in the Order. With Severus exposed as a spy, the Order had needed someone on the inside at Hogwarts to take over, at least in part, his old role.
"So, you want me to help? With Neville? What can I do?"
She nodded. She looked a bit relieved, he thought.
"He must not see you, Harry. We cannot trust him yet. Not completely, not given the circumstances. We are looking for a new place to move him, where he can be as safe as he is here, yet not compromise our security. But until then, he will remain here, and he must not see you."
He was captured because of me, Harry said softly, looking down into his tea. He was captured because the Dark Lord was not absolutely convinced he interpreted the prophecy correctly, she corrected. It is not your fault. You knew nothing of this world. Harry considered a moment. I'll do what you want, he said at last. Whatever you and Severus think best, I can go back to my flat for a while. That will not be necessary. After what he's been through, I doubt he'll be thinking of anything much for the next week or so. He'll be satisfied with having enough to eat and drink and a comfortable bed to sleep on. He is not strong enough yet to venture from his bed, much less his room. Harry looked up. Right. About that, there's something I don't understand. The Dark Lord doesn't seem reluctant to kill anything or anyone. He paused, frowned. So why is Neville alive, Minerva? What was he keeping him for? Minerva did not have an answer. And upstairs, sitting in his desk chair, but pushed back from the desk, legs crossed, chin resting on his steepled hands, Severus Snape was considering the same question. Neville's parents had been tortured to insanity, left for dead but not dead, condemned to go on in functional bodies with minds that seldom, if ever, touched reality. True, it had been the Dark Lord's followers, not the Dark Lord himself, who had committed this atrocity. So why was Neville Longbottom not only alive, but, from first appearances anyway, still in possession of his sanity? Severus mentally reviewed what they already knew, or what Neville had already told them. Any of it, all of it, must be considered suspect at this point. He had woken up in a cell. There'd been a small window high on a wall and near the ceiling, a window he could never reach. He'd been given food and water, never enough, but always edible, potable. He'd been visited, tortured mentally and physically, by Bellatrix Lestrange, by Lucius Malfoy, by Alexis Caro, by the Dark Lord himself. To stay sane, he'd mentally reviewed every magical plant he knew, every ordinary muggle plant. He'd made mental grocery lists, mental birthday lists, even lists of potions ingredients. He had no accounting for days or years, and seemed inordinately surprised that he'd been in prison for 5 years. They'd shaved his tangled beard and mustache. That should have been proof enough. I almost didn't recognize him through the beard, Severus, but he'd grabbed my hand, desperate. It's me, Professor McGonagall, it's Neville. The cell had turned out to be in Malfoy Manor. After a time, he'd been visited there by Narcissa, by Lucius, by Draco. They told him stories, that Hogwarts had fallen, that the Dark Lord had taken his rightful place as ruler of the magical world, that Dumbledore was dead, his family was dead, his friends were all dead. There was no resistance. And then, miraculously, unbelievably, a house elf had stepped forward and had offered to help him escape. He'd take him to Hogsmeade, to the gate of Hogwarts, where he could find friends, someone to help him. Severus had tried legilimency, knowing that the boy would be far too weak to resist. He could not, would not, feel bad for what amounted to mental rape, not in these dire circumstances. The boy's mind had been clean. All that Severus saw fit with all that he had been told. But it was too clean, too perfect. Where was the emotion, the anguish, the relived pain of the Cruciatus, the encroaching insanity of isolation? It was almost as if he had been skillfully obliviated before the house elf set him free. Surgically obliviated. Severus did not want to think of what he might find under the surface of Neville Longbottom's mind. The Dark Lord was clever, extremely clever. By releasing Neville Longbottom, he was making a calculated, long-planned move. Infiltrate the Resistance. Find them. Undo them. Severus understood this. He'd only just controlled the rage he'd felt when Minerva and Aberforth had brought Neville to headquarters. Minerva, as Secret Keeper, had made the decision. She'd had to make it quickly and had had few choices. He could not, would not, falter for this. And it was done now, so they would have to keep very close tabs on Mr. Longbottom. They would move him to a different location as soon as one could be found. The Lovegoods might take him, he thought. Their home was well protected and adequately remote, but he would have to provide round-the-clock guards, both for Neville and the Lovegoods. He did not think that Xenophilius and Luna Lovegood could best a single Death Eater, much less a full-blown raid. Or perhaps he could send Harry to the Lovegoods instead, and keep Neville here where he could be under constant surveillance. Of course, Harry could go back to his own flat. The thought of sending Harry away was unappealing. He felt weak, compromised, by emotion, by this pulling, unfamiliar need. He wanted Harry near. He did not think that sending him away, back to his flat, to the Burrow, to the Lovegoods, could possibly have more benefits than risks.
to be truthful, and it was time for Severus to take a good hard look at himself and stare the truth in the eye. He wanted Harry here for very selfish reasons, but could justify keeping him here for very professional ones. He found himself thinking about Harry often, distractedly rising from his desk and visiting the training room so he could stand at the door and watch Mad-Eye work with him. He'd watch them drill, the same sequence of spells over and over and over and over. Mad-Eye never tired of putting Harry through the paces. In the space of no more than a few weeks, Harry was at least a third-year level, and Severus never tired of watching Harry. He'd stand by the door, arms crossed over his chest, scowl on his face, and Mad-Eye would nod at him and continue on. Mad-Eye thought he was keeping track of their secret weapon. Harry, though, knew why he visited. Harry was not fooled by Severus's serious demeanor, his persistent scowl, his single-minded leadership of the Order of the Phoenix. When Severus Snape stood in the doorway of the training room, Harry knew he was there because he liked watching Harry. And while Severus had 100 reasons to keep the relationship secret for just a while longer, he could not make himself stop watching. On Tuesday evening, after his lessons with Minerva ended, Harry stared at Severus's office door for a long moment before sighing and making his way to the seldom-used back stairway. He had moved up to Sirius's brother's old room on the third floor the day before. He'd tried to stay out from underfoot the last several days, and of course out of Neville's sight should his door be left open by mistake. Everyone who knew of Harry's existence had been subject to a long discussion with Severus, and a monitoring spell was put on Neville's room to assure that there were no slip-ups. Those who knew Neville were finding it difficult to believe that there could possibly ever be anything disingenuous about him. The house had been abuzz with activity and visitors. There had been a late-night impromptu meeting with some of the senior members of the Order, about Neville, Harry was sure. He hadn't been invited to the meeting and hadn't had a chance to get Severus alone since. Not that he needed or wanted inside information. But Neville's reappearance had changed Grimmauld Place. It had changed the atmosphere. The very air was thicker, the tension palpable. No matter the joy at finding another lost boy alive, everyone was on edge. Everyone expected something to happen. Something big. Something final. Harry knew he wasn't ready. He doubted he'd ever be ready, in fact. He didn't have a killer instinct or a desire to avenge. He enjoyed dueling, but it still felt like a game to him, play-acting. He looked around the room he was using now. Sirius had had a younger brother named Regulus. Regulus was a Death Eater, a Slytherin who joined the Dark Lord while still in school. He'd disappeared soon after he'd left Hogwarts. The room hadn't been touched since. Regulus's school things were still on the desk, his posters on the wall. It felt more like a mausoleum than a bedroom, but Harry was grateful for the privacy anyway. He pulled off his shoes and socks, slipped out of his jeans, and pulled on cotton pajama bottoms and shucked his shirt. It was really too early for bed, and if he'd been at his flat, he'd have turned on the telly or the radio, perhaps spent some time playing games on his computer or reading the papers that had stacked up unread on the table. But he wasn't at his flat. He was at Grimmauld Place, the Order headquarters, where there was no electricity. Damn. He still couldn't get over that. But he smiled, pointed his wand at one of the oil lamps on the wall. Lumos. He was still smiling, looking at the end of his wand and grinning, when a quick rap sounded on the bedroom door. Harry. He pulled open the door and stared at Severus. Severus raised an eyebrow. Are you planning to invite me in? Oh, right, of course. Come in. He stepped aside, then closed the door behind Severus. You came to my room, he said. He felt a bit breathless and starry-eyed. Severus was in his room. His room. I did, answered Severus. It certainly wasn't an accident that I had you moved up here. Harry smiled. Brilliant, he said. He took a step closer to Severus. You look exhausted. I am having trouble concentrating, thinking. Severus glanced around the room, then walked over to the desk. He picked up a textbook sitting there, examined it, then replaced it carefully. Did your godfather tell you anything about his brother? Regulus? Harry said. He was a Slytherin. He became a Death Eater. He disappeared. We were friends of a sort, Severus said. He reached out and brushed his fingers over a photograph of the Slytherin Quidditch team that was thumbtacked to the wall over the desk, then turned toward Harry. Perhaps you can help me, Harry, he said, changing both the tone and the direction of the conversation. I need a new perspective, a fresh perspective. If I told you that a house elf is loyal only to its master, that they are bound to this master and cannot go against his will, what would you think of Mr. Longbottom's claim that he was freed from captivity by a Malfoy family house elf?
I'd think the elf was ordered to let him go, said Harry.
Precisely.
Severus walked around the room, running his hand along the furniture, stopping again to finger a faded Slytherin banner. He pivoted, turning toward Harry, who had settled on the edge of the bed.
But why? Why did the Dark Lord want Neville Longbottom delivered into our hands?
He thinks he'll get to the Order through him, said Harry. He was sitting cross-legged in the middle of the bed now, and he took off his glasses and placed them on the bedside table. Can he put some sort of tracking spell on him? Some way he'll always know where he is?
He could. There are a variety of tracking spells available. Parents frequently use them on young children, but none of them can penetrate the defenses we have built here. Minerva and Aberforth checked him for such spells before bringing him here, of course. That being said, the Dark Lord could have invented something new, something we could not readily identify.
It wouldn't be something so obvious, would it? Asked Harry, watching Severus continue to pace. Maybe something psychological, something like a post-hypnotic suggestion? Seeing Severus's puzzled expression, he explained. You know, a command that's somehow buried in his brain and something triggers it. Maybe something someone says or does, something he hears. You don't have sci-fi in the Wizarding World, do you?
No, we don't. He shook his head. But continue.
Harry grabbed Severus's wrist as he paced by. Sit down here with me. Relax a minute. Tell me about Neville. What has he told you? Do you have any reason to suspect he's gone over to the dark side?
The dark side.
Harry laughed. Muggle movie, never mind. But you know what I mean. Do you think Neville's joined up with them? That he's here as a spy? Severus shook his head.
The Dark Lord knows my skill in legilimency, magical mind reading. He knows I would be able to easily assess Mr. Longbottom's true loyalties.
He sank down onto the bed, and Harry scooted up behind him and wrapped one arm around him, resting his chin on Severus's shoulder.
No, it is something else. Something more insidious.
Does Neville seem happy to be here? Has he said anything about leaving?
He has said very little. He is weak still. He has just learned that the woman who raised him is dead. I do not expect to learn anything significant from him for at least another week. I will not try legilimency again until he is stronger.
You're keeping a guard on him. It was a statement, not a question. Do you plan on moving him, then? Someplace less important to the Order?
We cannot keep a round-the-clock watch on him any place but here. This will have to suffice for now.
Constant vigilance, Harry murmured, chin still resting on Severus's shoulder. He sighed as Severus leaned back against him, as if finally giving in to the offered comfort and warmth. Look, Neville's not going to get up and walk out of here on his own, and no one new can get in here without the Secret Keeper. I think you're safe to stop worrying about it for an hour or two.
I have watch at midnight, said Severus.
3 hours, then, said Harry. He kissed Severus's neck and ran his hand down his arm. Take your boots off and lie down with me for a while. He meant to let Severus rest, but 30 minutes later he was naked and straddling Severus, riding him, biting his bottom lip as Severus thrust up into him. Severus's hair was dark against the white pillowcase, his deep eyes sparkling in the diffused light of the wall sconce. He gripped Harry's hips tightly, thrusting up with his entire body, and Harry ground down, thinking nothing had ever felt this good. Not leaving the Dursleys, not getting his first trust fund check, not finding out about magic, not holding his wand. It wasn't just the perfect angle and Severus's cock grazing his prostate with every slow thrust. It wasn't just the fingers digging into the flesh of his hips, anchoring him on his amazing ride. It was that look in Severus's eyes, and the way they fit together so perfectly, and the way he pulled Harry down onto him when they'd both come, and the words he'd said, the words spoken to Harry's ear as their rapidly beating hearts slowed.
When this is over, it will be me and you, and everyone will know, and no one will care. I deserve it. I've earned it.
And when he was certain Harry was asleep, just before he rose to dress and leave to take his watch.
All these years, Harry Potter, I've been waiting for you.
A week went by, and another started. Harry continued to train with Mad-Eye, with Kingsley Shacklebolt joining him now to vary up the routine. He dueled Fred on Thursday and spent most of Friday with Minerva transfiguring teacups into pincushions.
He didn't think that would advance their cause very much, solve the problem of the Dark Lord and all, but it was a lot of fun piercing the pincushions with the pins he'd transfigured from matchsticks. Minerva was quickly becoming something of a mentor to him, a mentor and a friend. He supposed, had he not been inclined to see Severus as he did, had he been attracted to someone like Ginny, that Severus would have filled that mentor role. He thought that his training would be even further along if he had Severus leveling jinxes and stunning spells at him. Not that Mad-Eye took it easy on him, but Severus's reputation preceded him. He and Minerva had continued their ritual of having tea together when they finished up studies in the late afternoon. If she were in exactly the right mood, she'd tell him snippets of stories about his parents. Apparently his dad really was a bit of an arrogant bastard when he was younger, but he turned into a fine man and an excellent father. "They brought you to a meeting, or to when you weren't yet walking," she said, a fond, faraway look in her eyes. "He was so proud of you. You couldn't bear it that Neville was bigger than you, though. You two were only a day apart, you know, but you could crawl circles around Neville, and had a toy broom that lifted a foot or so off the ground when you were only starting to take your first steps. And your mum, oh, your mum, Harry, she was such a clever witch. She told me once that she'd have a dozen more children if they were all as good as you." She sighed, and Harry looked away. In those lonely days of his early childhood at the Dursleys, he'd often imagined a sister and a brother, someone to play with, to stand up to Dudley with him. But imaginary siblings were about as useful as imaginary friends, and he'd moved on, and by the time he left and joined the service, he seldom thought about how his life could have been, had things been different. His past was what it was. The only thing he could change was his future. One night, after a grueling training day with both Mad-Eye and Kingsley, Harry woke in the early hours of the morning to find Severus in bed with him. There had been an order meeting the night before, too, nervous and contentious, and Harry had left the room at 10 o'clock as soon as Severus had officially ended the meeting, but before most everyone else had left. He had curled up in bed and fallen asleep almost immediately, trying to block the image of tortured muggles from his mind, determinedly not thinking about Voldemort infiltrating the PM's office. Severus was sleeping. He was wearing a plain white t-shirt and black boxer shorts, and had one hand splayed over his heart. He looked relaxed, off guard, and Harry looked his fill for a long while, staring at Severus's long nose and sharp cheekbones in the soft moonlight, counting his slow breaths, watching his brow furrow and relax. Severus looked vulnerable asleep, and Harry realized then that Severus would not allow just anyone to see him like this. He spooned up against Severus's side and laid his own hand over Severus's, thinking, as he relaxed to the rhythmic rise and fall of Severus's chest, that sharing the bed with Severus in sleep seemed even more intimate than thrashing about on it in the throes of sex. On Thursday, Hermione and Ron came to visit Neville again. They spent a half hour with him, then came to find Harry in the library. "He's a bit better, maybe," Ron told him. "He talked a little, and smiled at our stories. He watches us. His eyes are tracking better."
"He looks puzzled," said Hermione. Her voice held a note of concern. "It's as if something is trying to click in his brain, but he can't quite make the connection. Last time we saw him, I thought he was happy to see us, but this time I'm not convinced he really remembers us."
"It's creepy," Ron added with a little shudder. "Does he say much?" asked Harry, wondering what decision Severus had made about moving Neville or keeping him here.
"He'll answer questions. He smiles. He talks about that elf, Dobby." Ron shook his head. "Bunch of bunk, that is. But he believes it. He believes that an elf actually defied his master and got him out of there."
"You know, Ron, it is possible," said Hermione. "House elves do have brains, and this Dobby obviously saw how he was being treated and took pity on him."
"McGonagall stopped in to say goodbye to him while we were there," said Ron, interrupting his wife and shaking his head at her obvious blind spot about house elves. "Neville's always liked her. But today, as soon as he saw her, he got all quiet. He just kept staring at her with this look on his face, like he couldn't understand why she was there. I can tell it upset her. She tried to be all cheery, but she finally left when he wouldn't stop staring. Even after she left, he'd stared at the door for a long time."
"He's been through a lot," said Hermione, shuddering. "I hope they find a good mind healer for him. Someone the Order can trust, of course. I suggested that they take him to a muggle doctor, someone who specializes in abuse victims."
"How's training with Mad-Eye going?" asked Ron, letting Hermione's musings trail off unanswered.
"I'm working with Kingsley now, too,"
Harry shrugged. Fine, I guess. They seem pleased enough, anyway. I like the physical part of it, but coming up with the right spell at the right time, well, it's not as easy as it seems.
Oh, it doesn't seem easy at all, said Hermione, and I don't know why they're bothering with things like jelly-legged jinx to begin with. You need to know how to incapacitate someone, a petrification spell, or stupefy. Death Eaters don't play around with anything silly. If you're dueling a friend, they may try to get in a tickling jinx or a stinging hex, but a Death Eater?
A Death Eater might torture you before he kills you, said Ron. He looked glum. They're not teaching you the Cruciatus, are they?
Harry shook his head. He changed the subject, distracting Ron with planning another time when they could get together to play Quidditch. He was bothered by the conversation the rest of the day, not just the part about the kinds of spells he was learning, but more so about Neville and Minerva. He couldn't find Severus after dinner. He'd been thinking of challenging him to a game of chess, so he sat in the upstairs parlour reading a Quidditch magazine Ron had left, thoughts straying always back to Neville. Neville, who was in a room at the other end of the corridor. Neville, who had somehow escaped 5 years of captivity. Neville, who had been kept alive by the Dark Lord. But why? Why? And why was Neville disquieted by Minerva? Why had he stared like that? Why had he watched her? It didn't seem right. She was his rescuer, wasn't she? She found him at the gates of Hogwarts, took him to Hogsmeade, to Aberforth, brought him to Grimmauld Place. Brought him here, to the Order headquarters. Because she was the Secret Keeper. The Secret Keeper? His stomach flopped. Minerva was the Secret Keeper, and Neville was watching her, tracking her. She was the only one here that had an association with Hogwarts, the only one here who would have been at Hogwarts to bring him here, and Neville was more interested in her than in anyone else. Who was inside there, in Neville's brain? The brain Severus had described as surgically clean. Who was looking out of Neville's eyes? Harry didn't have a lot of experience with magic, nor in the magical world, but he'd seen enough already in these few short weeks to know you should never, ever take anything at face value. Neville was watching Minerva for a reason. He'd been kept alive by Voldemort for a reason. He'd been released for a reason. What if that reason was to discover the Secret Keeper for the headquarters of the Order of the Phoenix? What happened if something happened to a Secret Keeper? The Quidditch magazine dropped to the floor as he stood. He couldn't shake the sinking feeling in his stomach. He took 2 steps toward the door, intent on finding Severus. Severus could tell him if he were being ridiculous. Severus could, and suddenly someone was shouting.
Get him out of here!
Harry froze. It was Severus's voice, and footsteps were pounding up the stairs and someone else was shouting. An odd wailing was coming from down the corridor. From Neville's room. Who was on duty now? Poppy? Hadn't he seen her an hour or two ago in the kitchen? A scuffling. Someone was pounding around in that room. Fighting? He took a step toward the door just as Remus burst into the room.
Harry, come with me.
Remus didn't wait for him to react. In a surprising show of strength from this man that Harry knew as the calm and gentle counterpart to his godfather, he grabbed Harry around the middle and started dragging him into the corridor.
Stop struggling. We don't have much time.
What's going on? Where are we going? Remus? The door to Neville's room burst open. Remus cursed. He quickly reversed direction in a near panic and started to push Harry back into the sitting room.
Get him out of here!
It was Severus yelling from the lower floor.
Lupin, take him and leave, now!
What's going on? Harry hissed at Remus, struggling against him, but Remus stood firmly in the doorway, blocking him in the room. Neville Longbottom was in the corridor, standing in the corridor with a wand.
Neville, where's Poppy?
Remus said, voice low, calm. Neville Longbottom was staring at Lupin, staring at the struggling man behind Lupin, staring with wild eyes, eyes not comprehending what he was seeing.
Stupefy! Incarcerus! Stupefy!
It was Sirius's voice, strong and sure, cocky even from below. Neville, distracted, looked toward the stairs.
Go!
Remus pushed Harry back into the sitting room and charged down the corridor to deal with Neville. Now Sirius and Severus were both shouting out spells. Their voices rose up the stairway, amid the sound of furniture being moved, bodies and spells hitting the walls. It sounded like Dudley and Uncle Vernon wrestling in the formal living room. Harry's heart was racing. He knew Severus wanted him out of here. That was abundantly clear. But it was too late for him. Maybe too late for all of them. More pounding on the stairs. His heart nearly stopped. He peeked out the crack in the door, saw a figure in black he didn't recognize, raised his wand, took a breath, held it.
Stupefy.
The spell hit the man square in the middle of the chest, and he fell, face down on the floor.
Get back! Get back! Yelled Remus.
Harry realized he was not saying his name, not saying his name on purpose.
Hide!
Stupefy. Harry was calm, calmer than he imagined he should be given the fact that he was about to die. His wand was steady in his hand as he took out the second man. Death Eaters. Robes, masks, not quite what he had imagined when Sirius had described them, but who else could they be? He shot a glance down the hall. Remus had disarmed Neville and had him in a stranglehold. Neville went limp, but in the moment before he gave in and stopped struggling, his eyes met Harry's. And in that very moment, that very second, Harry's scar exploded. Pain, like he'd never known, pain worse than the crushed hip, coursed through him, made him fall to his knees. He struggled up again, nearly blind with the pain, gripping his wand like a lifeline. He was angry, unaccountably angry. Rage boiled within him. Rage at the infidels, the mudbloods, the blood traitors, at the traitor inside Hogwarts, at the Death Eater who had betrayed him. But it wasn't Harry's rage. It was foreign, unfamiliar, and it didn't fit within the boundaries of his mind. It spilled outward, and it was only with the most supreme effort that Harry was able to separate his mind from it and understand, finally, that he was feeling Voldemort's anger. Through Neville. Through his scar. There was more shouting downstairs, and a new form on the stairs, shrouded in black, moving surely, effortlessly, upward. Severus's voice again.
Black! Sirius! Damn it! Remus! Sirius is down! Go!
Minerva. Minerva would never betray them willingly, would never let in the enemy. Sirius was down. Severus would be next. Rage boiled within him again, but it was his own rage this time, his own to feel, to control. No, he'd only just gotten his life back. This had all gone horribly wrong. He was supposed to have time, to learn spells more useful than Lumos or Axio or even Stupefy. Time to kill the snake. Dumbledore had said the snake must die before Voldemort. The penny dropped. No, not the snake. The snake wasn't the sixth intentional Horcrux after all.
My pet. Where is my pet? Where have you put him, werewolf? Where have you taken him?
Lupin stood in the corridor, wand raised, facing Voldemort. Harry watched, horrified, and time seemed to slow down as Voldemort raised his wand, as Lupin swung his in a great arc, as Neville, rushed from the side, headbutting Remus, knocking him to the ground as the vibrant arc of green light from Voldemort's wand cut into him instead. He fell without a sound on top of Remus, and Voldemort let out a shrill cry of unmitigated rage. Harry thought it not unlike the death cry of a wounded animal. A Stupefy was on Harry's lips. It was there, ready, when he stepped into the corridor and faced Voldemort. But when he raised his wand, when he looked into those near-reptilian eyes, he knew a stunning spell would never fell this monster.
Expelliarmus!
The green light came at him, and there was no time to think or to react. No time to do anything, anything save stare at the man who had taken everything from him and was now about to take his life. He had a vague impression of glowing eyes, and wondered briefly how it was that he wasn't dead, how it was that he was still standing, holding his wand. Wondering why his wand hand was being pulled forward, connected to his enemy by a bright beam of spell light. He gripped the wand harder, stepped backward with effort, not understanding. His gaze was riveted on a ball of focused light where white beam met green. It was like roiling energy, a maelstrom of power, and it was creeping closer to him along the strange intertwined threads of light. He pushed. The ball inched further away, back toward Voldemort. As he held the wand, as he pushed with all his might, streamers of light broke off the main circuit, weaving themselves cage-like over and around the combatants in the corridor. Harry held on. His body felt heavier than it ever had. Before him, Voldemort took a step backward, finally comprehending.
"Harry Potter," he hissed. We meet at last."
"We meet again," said Harry, daring to look at this man who had terrified the wizarding world. He wanted nothing more than to drop his wand and flee, melt through the floor and fall into his little London flat, transport himself back to his safe life at university, with study groups and lectures and meet-ups at the coffee house. But he needed to finish this. For his parents, for Minerva, for Severus.
"Dumbledore lied,"
spat Voldemort. His rage made the cage glimmer and spark.
"He lied."
Harry gripped his wand so tightly he knew his shaking fingers must be making indentations in the wood. He pushed again, forcing the uncompleted spell forward, toward his opponent. Sweat was beating on his face. He heard shouting, and a beautiful, mournful, melancholic trilling sound that warmed him like wizarding chocolate, like Minerva's approving smile, like waking up in Severus's arms. And somehow, the sound seemed to strengthen his resolve. His parents, Minerva, Severus. He pushed again, and the roiling ball of energy separated, became two smaller balls, one creeping closer to him, the other closer to Voldemort. His arm ached. His head was a constant, throbbing pulse of pain. It pounded with Voldemort's rage at Dumbledore's deceit, at finding Harry alive. And Harry understood only that he had to push his ball forward to complete the spell, and Voldemort must have understood too, because his spell, contained in its own ball, was inching forward, closer and closer to the tip of Harry's wand.
"Lupin!"
It was Severus calling. Remus was moving behind him now, but he did not answer.
"Harry!"
"Severus, stay back!" Harry warned, instinctively pushing his magic through his wand with every ounce of strength he possessed.
"Hold on, Harry! Hold on!"
He took time only to throw a stasis spell at Black before half-jumping, half-climbing over Malfoy and Avery, both stupefied on the kitchen floor and blocking the doorway. He ignored Lestrange's lifeless form staring at the ceiling of her ancestral home and rushed up the stairway to the main level. He didn't understand how this had happened, not yet, but in his heart of hearts he knew Minerva was gone and hoped with heart, body, and soul that Lupin had gotten Harry out of the house in time. The eerie glow coming from the first-floor corridor unnerved him.
"Lupin!"
There was no answer. His head swam. His heart skipped. Was he hearing Phoenix song?
"Harry!"
"Severus, stay back!" He skidded to halt near the top of the stairway, beside a birdcage of light containing Harry and Voldemort. He could not approach it. Something repelled him when he got within a yard of it. It was a cage of light and energy, a three-dimensional spiderweb filled with a sound he hadn't heard since that horrible night he'd left Hogwarts, the night Albus had died. "Severus! We were wrong! Al was wrong!" Harry's voice rose from within the spell's cage, hollow and echoing. Severus could hear the near panic in his voice, could make out how he gripped his wand out with both hands, pointing it toward his enemy.
"Hold on, Harry!"
The panic in his voice was unfamiliar, the weight in his stomach unnerving. He felt helpless, trapped outside of a war that had always been his war, his battle. His until Harry Potter tripped into their lives. Into his life.
"Severus!"
It was Lupin now, calling out from behind Harry.
"Stay there. Wand ready."
"It's not the snake, Severus!" called Harry. His voice was raw, desperate. He choked. "It wasn't the snake! It was Neville!" And suddenly Severus understood. Too late. Far too late. Longbottom, the sixth Horcrux.
"Hold on, Harry!"
His voice was a plea, and he tried again to push against the light, but it was repelled back toward the stairway.
"Severus!" Lupin shouted.
"Serious?"
"Alive!" barked Severus. "Under stasis. Get help. Reinforcements. Go!"
Remus was gone with a crack, reappearing on the other side of the cage behind Severus and taking off down the stairs.
"Harry, not much longer. You have it. Stay strong. Steady. Focus, Harry. Focus."
He tried to keep his voice calm and low, but knew that any moment it could be over. Harry was straining, arms shaking, sweat beading off his face.
"Do not listen to him, Harry Potter. He is a spy and a traitor. Does he love you as he loved your mother, Harry? Love, a worthless, useless emotion. It did not save your mother, Harry. It did not save Albus Dumbledore. It will not save you."
Voldemort laughed, a hollow, heartless sound. Harry's almost wavered. Severus... had Severus left his mum?
"Ah, so the traitor has not told you. Has Severus not told you that he grovelled at my feet, begging me not to kill her, bargaining with me.
Harry, don't listen to him. Severus's voice came at him, and even though it was edged with fear, even though there might be truth in Voldemort's words, Harry focused on Severus's. Neville is dead, Severus, Harry called out. He jumped Remus and got hit with Voldemort's killing curse. Voldemort killed him. We can end this. We can end this now. Then Harry. Harry stared through the cage of light past Voldemort, eyes locked with Severus's, and pushed harder. He could hear Severus behind Voldemort, and though the words were slurred, he heard their meaning. He knew Severus had understood him, that Neville was the Horcrux, not the snake as Dumbledore had thought. Neville, whom he had kept close to him all these years. With Neville gone, the only pieces left of Voldemort were trapped together in this bizarre cage. There was no escape, and Harry understood that. Severus could not break through, and neither he nor Voldemort could escape it while their wands were locked. Well, he wasn't going anywhere unless he took the soulless bastard with him. The timing had to be perfect. The killing curse had to hit him first, and Severus had to be ready to kill Voldemort as soon as he fell. He knew he could count on Severus to finish him off. The pulsing green ball was close now, nearly as close to him as his own spell ball was to Voldemort. Inches now, mere inches. Enough, he hoped. Enough to distract Voldemort, to give Severus the time he needed to take him down once and for all. "Kill him," he pled, hoping Severus would hear. "Kill him, Severus!" He swallowed. What would death be like? Would his soul really live on in a new dimension? A few weeks ago he'd have thought that there was nothing beyond the existence he already knew. A few weeks ago, before he went to the dentist and met Hermione, before Hermione brought him a Severus, Severus would live. He steeled himself, closed his eyes, surrendered. The green ball touched the tip of his wand and exploded outward in 1,000 splinters of light. Harry was hit first. He crumpled to the ground as Voldemort cackled only once before realization hit him, and the bouncing green rays came at him, still trapped within the fading golden cage. He was hit 100 times, but the first one did all the work. He fell backward through the cage walls that were no more, his body falling headfirst down the stairway and sliding past Severus. Thump, thump, thump. Then coming to rest, finally, with a sickening crunch on the landing far below. Heaven looked remarkably like the top of St. Paul's Cathedral. Harry opened his eyes to the lights of London below and an endless expanse of stars above. He was sitting on the walkway, leaning back against the cathedral, and he was not alone. "I wondered when you'd get here." Harry slowly turned his head to the left. Neville Longbottom was sitting beside him, leaning back against the stone wall, just as he was, hugging his knees. His face was shrouded in shadow, but he looked calm and blissfully at peace. "Are we dead?" asked Harry. He held up his hand, palm down, and stared at the skin and veins. He closed his hand, opened it again, then pinched the skin. Neville shrugged, eyes raised skyward. "Maybe. It's beautiful here." Harry closed his eyes and sighed. "It is." He didn't say anything more. There didn't seem to be any need to talk. Not really. Time seemed unimportant. There was no need to fill the awkward silences. "But you've been dead before." Neville reached forward toward the rails. He passed his fingertips through them, waved his hand back and forth, smiling. "So have you," Harry said. "It wasn't like this, though," said Neville. He passed his hand through all the rail again. "These bars aren't real." Harry stretched his legs forward. They passed through the metal rails and reached the edge of the walkway. "Did you know?" asked Harry, after another lengthy pause that could have lasted seconds or decades. He rubbed a scar. "About his soul?" Neville rested his head on his knees. "Yeah, he told me. Over and over and over and over. So I would be an appropriate vessel for his tortured soul." Neville looked down, then tilted his head up and gazed at the stars. "I didn't have a window. I missed the stars." Now Harry looked up. "It's better not knowing, about the soul, I mean." Neville smiled vaguely.
I could never not think about it. I could feel it, weaving itself with my own. Every time he touched me, every time he tried to break me. Neville, but there were no words. No words. Neville gulped in a breath of air and let his gaze go skyward again. Severus brought me here once. Neville smiled. Sounds funny to hear you say Severus. He's a bastard, you know. He tormented us in potions. He glanced over at Harry. I can't believe you're alive. You're the boy who lived. Am I alive? Asked Harry, pinching his hand once again. I think you are, said Neville. Harry smiled. He watched a bus far below trundle along the lamplit street. They didn't tell me about you, said Neville, when I came to Grimald Place. No, they didn't, answered Harry. You weren't yourself, Neville. Neville looked away sadly, and Harry placed a hand on his knee. But really, I haven't been back that long, have I? There wasn't a lot of time. No, there wasn't, was there? He stood then, and once more looked up at the stars above, at the starlight reaching them across the coldness of 1,000 light-years. Harry's eyes, however, were drawn to the lights down below. London, nearly close enough to touch, warm and glowing and alive. Tell them goodbye, will you, Harry? That I have to move on. Tell them I'm sorry. Harry stood. He smiled at Neville. There's nothing to be sorry about, Neville. Neville stretched out his hand toward Harry, and Harry took it and pulled Neville to him, hugging him like a long-lost brother, thinking of what Minerva had told him, that they were only a day apart in age, that he'd crawled circles around Neville. They'd played together then, in a time and place neither of them remembered. Their fathers had held them up to regard each other when they were babies. They'd started their lives together. But now Neville was drawn to the stars in the heavens, and Harry to the lights down below. He knew, when he woke, that he wasn't dead, but it certainly felt like heaven. He was snug and comfortable, he felt warm and safe and utterly at peace. Harry? He sighed and thought briefly about opening his eyes. It seemed like a great deal of effort, so he kept them closed. Harry, you need to wake up. Poppy thinks you've been sleeping long enough. Tired, he muttered. Laughter. You should be, after what you went through. But you've slept 12 hours straight now. Hermione? He cracked open an eye. Hermione was sitting beside him, and he knew now that he was in bed, a bed he didn't remember. He opened the other eye. He didn't know this room either. Do you remember what happened? Hermione asked, stroking sleep-sweaty hair off his forehead. Harry rolled onto his side and hugged his pillow. He frowned. He'd really rather not think about it. Voldemort. He's dead, killed by his own spell. Which should have killed you, by the way, boy who lived and lived again. Harry blinked. The fuzziness in his brain was beginning to dissipate. He rolled onto his back and stared at the ceiling, cold realization settling like a foreign weight in his belly. Minerva's dead, isn't she? Oh, Harry. Serious? He rolled his head on the pillow to face her. He's going to be all right. He's in hospital. Remus is with him. She grinned. Those two. Had me fooled, at least, though Ron claimed he'd known all along. She squeezed Harry's hand. Ridiculous pure-blood notion about... Oh, never mind. He'll be home in a couple of days, Harry. Harry smiled. I figured it out the first day, you know. Just like we all figured out you and Severus? Oh, Harry, don't look so surprised. Did you think we really couldn't tell? We've known Severus forever. He's never smiled before, Harry. Never. Is he all right? Asked Harry, twisting his head to look around the room. Where is he? At the Ministry with Kingsley, Hermione answered. Things are rather insane. Kingsley's got the entire Order Corps on his side, and they've managed a pretty thorough clean-up already. He's acting minister now, and Mad-Eye's the temporary head of the MLE, Department of Magical Law Enforcement, Harry. It's incredible, a real celebration. Diagon Alley and Hogsmeade are practically rioting. It's like England won the World Quidditch Cup. Has he come to see me? Did who? Severus? Hermione looked at him earnestly. Harry, when I got here... God, Only half an hour after it happened, he was frantic. He was sitting in a chair and he'd pulled up next to the bedroom door, gripping his wand so tightly you'd think he'd have squeezed sap out of it. He'd carried you in here after he finally let Poppy get near you. I think she realized you were alive before he did. Did he tell you how he did it? How the Dark Lord... You can say his name now, Harry. And yes, he did. Or he tried to. No one really understands, but he's got all sorts of books and he said I could have them. Harry smiled. That should make you happy. You like books.
I love books.
Harry stared down at his hand. Flesh and bone and skin and sinew. He pinched it. Neville knew, Harry said. Knew what Voldemort had done. He looked at Hermione. Why am I still here? Voldemort's spell, his Avada Kedavra, it took Neville's soul, too, replied Hermione in a very quiet voice. At least that's what Severus thinks. And he thinks when the killing curse hit you, it only killed the... well, the Horcrux. Because you've been kept away from magic, and that soul fragment was there in you, but it wasn't really anchored to you. She smiled. You're here, aren't you? You're still here, Harry. It's a miracle, but it's about time we had one. So, Voldemort's body? Hermione shuddered. Horrid, but absolutely dead. Kingsley and Arthur took it away. She paused, looked toward the door, which was slightly ajar, and then back at Harry. Ron and Bill were the first to get here after Remus sounded the alarm. They practically tripped over his body on the landing. They thought the worst, of course, but Severus was on the floor beside you, and when Ron tried to help, he wouldn't let him get anywhere close. Bill went into Neville's room and revived Poppy. Neville had gotten her wand and stunned her, and brought her out. When she got close and realized you... well... Hermione smiled and shook her head in disbelief. That you weren't dead. All hell broke loose. Harry rolled on his back again and stared up at the ceiling. When I was asleep, I talked to Neville on the outside walkway around the dome of St. Paul's Cathedral. You spoke with Neville? Harry Neville is dead, I know. He needed to go on. He told me to tell you all that he was sorry. Harry? Oh, you did talk to him, didn't you? She gave him a rather teary smile. Yeah, I can't even imagine what he went through. It wasn't just having the Horcrux. Hell, I had one too, and for far longer than him. But it was knowing about it, being taunted by Voldemort, being deliberately used like that. He's better off on the other side, don't you think? With his Gran? He is better off, Harry, said Hermione. But I'm awfully glad you made it. Ron's got all sorts of plans for you now that we can get on with life. Harry grinned. I have some plans, too, he said. He rolled the pillow up again and held it to his face, resting his forehead on it. It smelled like Severus. He looked at Hermione in surprise. This is Severus's room? Of course it's Severus's room, she said. She rolled her eyes. Where else would he take you, Harry? She shook her head, and Harry buried his face in the pillow. Poppy had made him eat, and Ron had come by to see him, and Mad-Eye, and a good half of the Order of the Phoenix. Then he'd fallen asleep again, here in Severus's bed, but woke when Severus settled on the edge to take off his boots. He smelled of smoke and dust and whiskey. "You've been celebrating without me," Harry said, rolling onto his side. A boot dropped onto the floor, then another, then Severus pulled back the covers and slid into bed beside Harry.
"I have been celebrating because of you," replied Severus. "And I've had a full report from Poppy, mind you. She's aware of our, extracurricular activities, and has advised me that you were to take it easy for a day or two."
"Madame Pomfrey told me that I'm perfectly fine, unbelievably fine, in fact. And apparently, she and everyone else is aware of our activities because you cried over my body and carried me to your own bed." It might have sounded like he was joking, but he was not. He dropped his voice and snuggled up closer to Severus.
"I did not cry," said Severus. "I do not cry."
"Sure," said Harry, pulling Severus against him. "You don't cry."
"You were stronger than Mr. Longbottom," Severus said after a proper snog, which he carried out despite Harry putting far more energy into it than Poppy might think proper, considering his condition. "The destruction of the soul fragment was more than his body could bear."
Harry considered a moment, then kissed Severus's shoulder, rubbing his stubbly chin against Severus's neck. A month ago, when I'd never heard of Horcruxes, I didn't believe in souls or an afterlife of any sort. But when I died...
You didn't die, Severus corrected.
Yeah, I did. Kind of. I had to decide whether to go on or to come back. He rested his face against Severus's chest and ran his hand over Severus's side. I'd have thought I'd have been at some other kind of place, like a train station maybe, you know, an airport, somewhere where you start a journey, or end one. Now Severus was running his hand over Harry's back, up and down, as if considering Harry's words.
A near-death experience, perhaps, he suggested quietly.
I don't think so, answered Harry. But Neville was there, too. The hand on Harry's back paused, then started the rhythmic motion again.
Where were you, then?
Harry let out a breath. St. Paul's, he said. The walkway around the outside of the dome, where you took me that first night.
Ah, St. Paul's. That place must have stayed with you.
It did, said Harry, glad that Severus wasn't discounting his story outright. It's so close to the stars, and so close to the London streets, to life. When you think about it, you can practically touch the sky there, but can so easily come back down, too. He paused, thinking of the cold, twinkling stars above and the warm lights of automobiles and buses and street lamps and pubs below. He took a long breath and released it, feeling at peace with his decision, and with Neville's. He wanted to touch the stars, Harry said. Neville did, I mean. But I just couldn't stop looking at the lights down below.
So you came back, and he went on.
He told me to tell you he's sorry, said Harry, but I told him he didn't have anything to be sorry for. He couldn't help being one, just like I couldn't.
But you came back, said Severus.
He pulled Harry closer so that their bodies nestled snugly together in the middle of his great four-poster bed.
You chose to come back, and as the great Albus Dumbledore used to say, it is our choices that define us.
I only learned about Horcruxes a few weeks ago, said Harry. But Neville knew for 5 years, and for 5 years he was tortured, mentally and physically, so that his body would be an appropriate vessel for Voldemort's soul. I don't know, Severus, if it were me in his shoes, I think I'd have chosen the stars as well.
But you came back, repeated Severus.
And he had that odd smile on his face again, and he rolled Harry onto his back, mindless of Poppy's warnings, and straddled him, held his hands to the mattress beside his head, and stared into Harry's eyes.
You saved us.
Harry turned his head and kissed Severus's wrist. I'm nobody's savior, Severus.
You are, and you came back to us.
To you, corrected Harry.
To me,
confirmed Severus. He kissed Harry then, and he was laughing and crying, and he was the Severus Harry knew, but more than Severus. He kissed the corner of Harry's mouth, whispering again,
to me.
The End. This has been Nobody's Savior by Sweet Samba, read by Star Duchess. It was written for Snape Potter's Secret Scenery Swap 2013, and this podfic was recorded for Podfic Big Bang in 2014. Thank you for listening.